Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Roma Press Podcast. We hope that you are doing very, very well. A welcome and a thank you to our newest patron over at Patreon, Luke Burgess. We appreciate your support, Luke, and to all of our other patrons who allow us to do what we do with the website and the podcast here possible. So thank you so much for your support. We're here to talk about the yesterday's Super Bowl, right? Nothing else happened at the weekend. It wasn't Roma Juve, was there?
No.
So I don't even know what to make of this anymore because I felt like there were two.
Didn't I predict it? Who said it?
Yes. So you were correct. You said 2-0. So full props to you.
Boom.
So I guess the thing is, immediately after the match, at least from my vantage point, I saw two distinct sort of takes on this. I saw the, oh, look, Fonseca can't win another big match, and people bringing up his record against the top six. And then I had other people saying, well, Roma played relatively well. You had an extremely negative Juve that nobody really expected them to play in that manner. I think we would all admit that. Fonseca said so himself. Where do you come out on this? I'd be curious to hear. And then B, I saw people getting a bit, not angry. Angry is the wrong word. Maybe annoyed is probably more correct. When Fonseca was discussing after the match how he was proud of his team, and then you add to that the infamous Instagram post, because of course, anytime there seems to be drama, social media almost every time comes into play. We had Veretu, who said we played on par with the champions. He ultimately ended up having to disable comments. You had Borja Mayoral, who I forget what he said. Exactly, Andy. What did his post say? Because I saw him lumped in with the.
He pretty much said, you know, we played as a team and the result didn't go our way or something like that, you know.
Okay, so everything I just threw onto you, what do you think? Because I feel like this one, there's more nuance to it because I think it is lazy just to say that, oh, look, he lost another big match. Because I do think that there were a lot of positives that you could take from it, believe it or not. Usually, if you had told me it's going to end 2-0 without having watched, I probably would have come on here and, again, done the Stephen A. Smith, yelled at you. Come on, Andy. Said stupid things.
Yep.
But you know what? I think this was one where you had to sit on the couch and take it in because not all results are the same.
Yep.
Certain 2-0s are different than others.
Yep.
And I don't know what has happened. My ADHD medication must be working, I don't know, a bit better today. I'm very positive right now. So I'm actually going to draw a lot of positives from that, particularly Gonzalo Villar. I thought he was very good. I thought he showed a ton of
Mancini.
Maturity. Yeah, Mancini was very, very good. And I don't know about you. This new game system, I don't know if we'll see it going forward. I don't think we will, at least. I really liked the extra man in the midfield. Now, of course, they struggled to score and create goal-scoring opportunities. The XG was 0.5, 0.6, depending on the website that you looked at. But I do think that this match, as opposed to like the Atalanta one or the Napoli one, it's easy to lump this one in with those two. But again, all losses against these big teams are the same. And I think we have to have a nuanced discussion about that because that's what it requires. And this one was different, I guess, is what I'm trying to say in my very long-winded manner.
Right. And for me, the opening should be Pirlo is a fraud. he's a fraud. He's a fraud. He'll always be a fraud, and he's a fraud, and he's a fraud manager. And the way he played against us was embarrassing.
I wasn't going to bring up the thesis, but I had it ready in case we wanted to go down that path. I don't want to, but I'm just saying,
God.
If we did go
I
had it.
I know
ready.
We have that. We have that PDF right in front of us. But listen. To be Juventus and to have those players out there play like some sort of like some sort of Juric led team, like some, I mean, Genoa against Napoli did better. And the differences aren't that big, you know, between those two teams and those two showings. Juve won because of quality. And now here I have, here comes the problem where I have because I can understand there is frustration with, you know, seeing the manager say, you know, we played on par with the champions, or, you know, we have to remember that this is Juve, and, you know, fans calling upon the mentality, you know, oh, this is the unacceptable. The mentalidade. The mentality, you know.
You would never know that he's Portuguese with that accent. You would think he's a Russian mobster who moved to Portugal and then moved to Rome.
I think that's pretty much what he did in Ukraine, man. I mean, that's where he found his girl, you know, being a Russian mobster. It's ridiculous to be here and talk about mentality, where mentality in this match, at least, had very little to do. Because you saw a team push forward. I mean, you had Bruno Perez racing in and just, you know, just causing havoc and creating chaos, pushing forward no matter what, you know, like some sort of Rambo. But this game, the difference maker was Juve have Ronaldo. Roma don't have Ronaldo. Juve have...
Roma have Paulo Lopez,
Roma have Paulo Lopez, who with four shots, he lets in three of them. So that's the difference. The difference is they have Szczęsny, they have superior quality, not even based on wages, but just superior quality. When you're Juventus, you can have that much quality. You can have, you know, Kulusevski coming off the bench, while Roma have to put on Bruno Perez or Carles Perez. That says it all. And in that match, I don't want to hear anything other than Juve has Ronaldo, because that's what it comes down to. Is Roma, you know, we sat here and we said we want to see Roma play. We want to see Roma try and create something. We want to see Roma go in with an attitude. Roma went into this game with an attitude. They just lacked that final touch. And it's definitely not easy when you have Bonucci and Chiellini on their best day. You know, when you have a team that parks the bus with that much quality, and then you have to rely. I mean, what did we have? Did we have like 14 corner kicks? So that
the shots on goal was astounding.
The shots on goal is one thing, but we had 14 corner kicks, I believe. And to me, that just shows you that this was a team that tried to push forward. Just that it lacked quality in the final touch. You never managed to really put Juve in a dangerous position. The only time then you allowed them to is when you had Ronaldo with his quality, with his talent, and then obviously you had Paulo Lopez doing the rest. So for me, this is, you know, there are negative losses. This is a neutral loss. It's a loss that I expected, but at least I saw a team that tried till the very end to do something with what they had. Pellegrini, not there. Dzeko, when he came on, I thought he was on vacation in some tropical island.
I was going to bring that up. There's a couple of things, negatives, and that was one of them, man. I mean, he looked... Could that guy have cared any less?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was...
You put him on the 60th minute or so, and you think, okay, Borja couldn't get it done because he just wasn't able to get through those two big logs right in front of him. Maybe Dzeko will make the difference against the tired Juve. And I thought, you know, you have Borja Mayoral putting all the effort in the world and not having an impact, and then you have Dzeko not putting all the effort in the world and also not having an impact. So of the two, I will always choose the first one. And to me, that's it. This was sort of a decimated Roma, that had a lot of problems, a lot of inexperience. It can happen, you know, with the mistakes that Ibanez makes or Kumbulla. Mancini was great. I would love to have more players really act from the first minute to the last minute, play and act like Mancini. Tough, you know, relentless. Those are positives, that there was a team that tried to do something. It just, you can do whatever you want, but when it comes to quality, when it comes to talent, it's very, very, very hard to overcome these types of opponents.
Yeah, so I made the mistake. I don't know if you did, but I utilized my Sky Sport subscription after the match. I never watched the post-match, but since they basically take me out to the shed for what their subscription cost is, I figured, you know what, might as well take advantage of it this time. Why not? I'll punish myself. I'm a glutton for punishment. Let me see what the temperature gauge is of these third parties and sort of the media in general as to what their view of this was. First off, you said it about Pirlo. They were praising this guy like he put on a tactical masterclass, right, against Roma. Come on, spare me. You said it. Yesterday is the difference between a club that can afford Ronaldo and one that has Carlos Perez coming off the bench. And I think it really is that simple. I don't think it's fair to hold this one in the same regard as, again, Atalanta, Napoli. Those, you could find plenty of fault in Fonseca. And trust me, I will happily go along with that, because I do
and
think,
you did.
Yes, and there are, and I think we would be naive to just admit that he has no fault and nothing to improve on. I think that would be silly. There's plenty of things he can improve upon. What happened against Juve, though, it's just one of those things. There's nothing you could do. There was nothing that could, and they could have played that for another 2 hours, and I don't think Roma would have scored.
Right, and also, if Roma had Szczesny in goal instead of Paul Lopez, that ends 0-0.
Exactly. So there were a couple of negatives. We already mentioned Dzeko. I want to talk about Paul Lopez, though, because we talked about it in the Patreon, the WhatsApp group, and it turned into this who's going to be the next goalkeeper sort of discussion. And frankly, I couldn't care less as to actually who it is, as long as it's not this. This feels like, okay, so we support Roma. So clearly all of us, wherever you live in the world, whatever religion or non-religion you do or do not follow, clearly we all did something in a former life. So we're starting from that premise. But this goalkeeper situation, since Alisson departed, it feels as if we've gone past the, have we parked the car on an Indian burial ground?
Mm-hmm.
This is...
We're past the Shining, yes.
Yeah, we're way past that. We're way past that. I mean, this feels as if the footballing deities, whatever they may be or look like, it feels like somebody in the midst of us, some Roma support, maybe it was me, maybe it was you, I don't know, really pissed them off. Because when it comes to this goalkeeper situation, it is astonishing. I think you would have more luck, you know. So for anybody who watches like the NBA, sometimes they'll do skits where they have like an animal pick at random who the winner will be. Like, for the Super Bowl, sometimes they'll have like a dog eat out of a bowl, who the winner will be.
Like in the World Cup, they had an octopus a few years
back. Yes, exactly. You had the octopus at the World Cup not so long ago. I feel like, Andy, if we went that route in choosing the next goalkeeper, I feel as if the success rate would be exponentially higher at Roma than what we did or have been doing over the last few seasons. And you could even make the case, besides Szczesny and Alisson before that, Donny, a guy I love, but there was good Donny and there was bad Donny. Bad Donny was very bad. Goikoechea, I mean, we could go down the list.
Yeah, we covered this in the throwback episode.
Yes.
Just so, terrible. Steckelenberg, yeah.
But seriously, I have to ask, how does Roma continuously do this? And the funny part is it was Petrachi the one who did this with Paolo Lopez, a guy who most of us, or I would say the majority of Roma supporters, hold in fairly high regard, a guy that some were even calling for to return once Friedkin acquired the club. So, listen, I'm not here to criticize Petrachi. He's not the only one to make this mistake, but I for the life of me, cannot understand this. I mean, and I'm not even... Listen, the goal of Ronaldo was individual brilliance, of course, although if you look at the still images of Paulo Lopez's body shape, positioning, it says everything. I don't know this goalkeeper situation is so bad. And if you look at save percentage... I think of the list of eligible players to make the list. There's either 22, maybe 23.
Yeah, Roma, we're right two. There. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So both Mirante and Paulo Lopez are in the bottom 5 to 7.
And we're in top 5 with that.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. So there's that. And then the other caveat I have to add to this is, and I know everybody was pointing out the XG after the match, and I understand it. So... Roma, when you remove the little table result, as we call it, against Verona, they've conceded 32 goals on the pitch, okay? Their expected goals against Andy, depending on the source that you're looking at, I've seen as low as 21.8, and I've seen expected goals against as high as 22.9. So, very small margin for error. So, basically, what that means is, Roma have conceded 32 goals on the pitch. Yep. According to the statistics, what they should have conceded...
Is
10 less. 21 or 22, depending on the source that you look at. For me, and again, this is why not all results against these big clubs are the same, but when you take Paolo Fonseca's record, it's easy, and I understand it, to levy as a criticism against him. But that says to me, Andy, that this team suffers in certain areas from individual mistakes and a lack of individual quality. And that was the difference on Saturday. And I don't think there is much more to evaluate beyond that. I think it starts right. And ends there.
Yeah, well, it says a lot when you've conceded so much to, you know, both Spezia and Verona. And it seemed like every shot, it was goal. You know, every shot went in. It speaks volumes of a goalkeeper that is very low in confidence. This is not the Paulo Lopez that Petrachi brought in. A player that was, you know, the third choice goalkeeper of the Spanish national team, a guy that was that actually was one of the highest rated players in terms of saves made in La Liga. A year prior to Roma getting him. So there were all the reasons to bring him in, you know. He was agile. He was really good. And now it's as if we don't have anybody. So it's even more admirable that we can sort of pull this whole thing together and stay afloat. Because and also I just want to say that as soon as we started looking at Silvestri from Verona, I believe he's had very similar performances to Paulo Lopez. I mean, you look at the game we played, and it's a terrible performance. You look at the recent game he played, again, terrible performance. So.
And he switched to Mino Raiola within the last 2 weeks.
Yes, so it's not exactly the recipe for success, okay? I mean, it's I would love to have an octopus select our next goalkeeper.
I would love that.
Because this is, you know, it's, I mean, Sirigu. I remember everybody was saying, oh, get low-cost Sirigu. This guy is having the worst year of his career.
Yeah, that list I refer to, don't look at who's at the very bottom, because I'll give you a hint. You just mentioned his name.
Yeah, Sirigu, yeah. There you go. I mean, it's terrifying that you're fighting for top four and you're right there among teams that have really good goalkeepers, teams that have just good goalkeepers, and teams that have so-so goalkeepers, but that's enough. That's enough for them to move forward. And we're doing this with two goalkeepers that are just mentally out of it, that are completely riddled with injuries from week to week. And it's scary, you know, the idea of going forward with this. Because when you look at the rankings, you know, the goalkeepers that, you know, have the worst performances in terms of saves are, you know, players like Sirigu, goalkeepers from teams like Crotone, teams that concede so much and are at the lowest point in the table. And you're Roma, you're up there. You can't have this. And I think that would give you such a boost to just have somebody do a fairly decent job. Not even brilliant,
right,
but just fairly decent. Just put, you know, make a save. At least give this team a chance, because if at their first shot on goal, Juve had what, two shots on goal?
They didn't have one after their last shot on goal was in the 41st minute,
and you 41. Lost it. And you lost it 2-0. So to me, that says so much about this game. You know, we say statistics don't count a lot, but this game, man, it's so frustrating to see all those numbers that go against this team. And what should have ended up as a draw goes into the records as a loss, and that's very unfortunate.
I couldn't have said it better than what you just elaborated on in terms of this. I don't really know, again, how this, or because again, when you add this result to the pile of bad results against the big teams, it does again give more ammunition against Paulo Fonseca. You can't deny that. But again, if you're not watching, you're batching them all together. It's easy to understand, I guess, why people are looking to go down this route after this result. I guess my biggest fear is with these results against the big teams, Andy. So just to sum everything up, against Juve, Inter, Milan, Napoli, Lazio, Atalanta. Roma's record this season is 0 wins, 3 draws, and 4 losses. Their goal difference is negative 12, so minus 12. Versus the rest of the Serie A, Roma is 12 wins, 1 draw, and 1 loss. And of course, that loss is because of the Verona. So,
yeah.
Right, so it's not really a loss. But the goal difference is plus 21. Really.
Unbelievable.
It should be, yeah, it should be 24 because of, again, Verona. So, listen, the big match thing does concern me. It bothers me. And it is a valid criticism. It absolutely is. My fear, though, is, Andy, is the more that you start to get these negative results against the big teams, the more pressure you put on yourself against these smaller teams. Are you at all worried about this? Because, again, we're not using this as a criticism necessarily against Fonseca. I'm more so worried about the team, and from a mental point of view, if you go into these matches defeated, essentially, whether it's, you know, before the match even starts, from a mental point of view, you have in the back of your head that the odds of us winning this are very, very small. Again, from an outsider's perspective of this, if I were a player, it would feel as if the pressure against the rest, you know, the Crotone, Spezia, so on and so forth, it puts that much more pressure on those sort of matches. So I feel like at some point they just have to win one to give themselves some breathing space. Something.
Right.
So are you at all worried that the worse this record gets against the big teams? Because, listen, it's being used as like a cudgel over the head of Fonseca. You don't like Fonseca? Oh, well, his record against a big team sucks. I understand it. I think I've used it on here before. I totally get it, especially after a negative performance like the one we saw against Atalanta, Napoli. There's a few that you can use, you know, over the last almost 2 years against Fonseca. The one from last night you cannot use against him, because that was, again, all things considered, I thought it was a relatively good performance, and they should and could have gotten something out of it. But I guess, again, I pose this to you, the worse this record gets, are you worried that the level that they have been maintaining against these smaller sides becomes a bit insurmountable or too difficult to keep up because, again, 12 wins, one draw, one loss, and it's not even a loss. So technically zero losses. It seems like it's a tall order or a tall request to ask them to keep that up.
Well, I have no reason to believe that that they'll lose focus because clearly, you know, the way they go into these matches against, you know, smaller teams like Bologna and Crotone, they go in and they know what to do. And we can look at other teams doing the complete opposite, you know. I mean,
exactly.
You have some teams that really play well against the bigger sides, but then, you know, like Napoli against Genoa, against Spezia, Atalanta losing their heads against Torino. So these matches are not easy at all. But Roma seem to have an understanding of how to approach these games, and so far, I can't say I will doubt them. Obviously, it's deflating because I think there is sort of there's starting to grow a bit of a lack of mutual confidence between the defense and the goalkeeper. Because when we talk about Olsen had a shitty defense. I mean, that year, the final year of Di Francesco, the second year of Di Francesco, started off awful, because nobody seemed to be on the same page. Everybody performed terribly, and so Olsen was just, you know, another piece to the terrible puzzle. And obviously then was moved to the bench. But here, you know, it's natural sometimes for the defense to make mistakes. This defense is young, can be inexperienced at times, can make mistakes, but usually they're aggressive. They do things right, but it's also in their right to occasionally make mistakes, you know, let somebody slip by, put a foot wrong in, you know, somewhere and get a foul or something. But it's the goalkeeper's duty to in those instances fill them with confidence. It works both ways. You can't have the defense just being there constantly for the goalkeeper and the goalkeeper being on vacation. It's a bit like Inter are finding their footing, but they have a great defense that somehow manages to hide Handanovic's shortcomings, and so far he's done very little to give back that same level of confidence. And with Roma, you don't have that much quality in terms of defense. You have sometimes Smalling is out, sometimes Mancini is a bit too eager, a bit too aggressive. Ibanez gets a bit too far forward, Kumbula a bit too slow on the turn, but it's okay to have, you know, situations where the opponent puts you in a tight spot. But at the end of the day, you have the sport of football is played with a goalkeeper because the objective is to protect your own goal. And when your goalkeeper just starts letting every single ball in, then you really have to just give up. And to me, that's the biggest concern is when will the team come to a point where the lack of confidence just transpires to a point where the performances stop, you know, when you just see that, oh my God, in order to win a game, even against like of Spezia, you have to score four goals in order to, you know, avoid comeback because this guy can't save anything. You know, that's, to me, that's the worrying aspect of it.
So that's exactly what I was going to pose to you is how do you do this moving forward? Because the margin for error now, again, is becoming smaller and smaller. These matches against the smaller teams, infinitely more important. I don't know how you continue to use Paulo Lopez. It just seems like...
Right, but we were saying that with Mirante, there was a point where we came exactly. After the Atalanta game and we said, I don't know how we can go forward with Mirante.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to pose. What do you do? because I don't know. Andy, there were people saying Trifusato. Is that the point we're at?
How long that this guy has been on Roma's payroll, I believe, for the last 3 to 4 years?
And he's been called up to the Brazilian national team before.
And he hasn't had a single performance in Serie A apart from, I believe, the Juve game.
The Juve won last May. Come on, man. The masterclass against Juve's
Serie C team. Yeah, it's true. I mean, and also when he went on loan. No,
and he didn't play.
So this guy, I mean, this is even bigger question mark. It's very, very difficult to me to find out what the hell is up with this and is if there is even a solution, because this puts Roma in a spot where they really have to perform 100% every time they go into Udinese, Benevento. You cannot let up. It's an absolute must. But you know, we're not here asking for Alisson-esque performances out of the likes of Mirante, who's, you know, 37, Paul Lopez, who's really had a tough time at Roma. We just want them to play okay, you know, like Mirante did under Ranieri. Remember when Olsen?
Right.
When I mean, for us, Mirante in those 12 games was the new Yashin. We were like, oh my God, you can make a save every once in a while? Is that allowed? Because that's what he was doing. He was playing okay. He was just doing a fairly decent job keeping the team afloat when possible. That's all you need right now is to at least save that first shot on goal so that your defense know you're there, you're ready.
You mentioned it. The thing with Paulo Lopez, it's not even necessarily... yes, the goals themselves that he concedes. I mean, he makes a ton of mistakes. You can tell, though, it's mental with him. But if you look at the shots conceded charts, I mean, it's not as if Roma are having these major and consistent lapse in their defense, Andy, and they're conceding high-quality goal-scoring chances to the opponent. If that was the case, I would say, you know what, we need to change things up. You need to remove Ibanez and bring Kumbula into the fold or something. At least in that regard, you would almost feel better from the standpoint of, oh, okay, this is what the data is telling to us. With this, it is so abundantly clear that you're conceding not even high quality chances, and medium quality is probably even too much of a compliment. You are conceding shots that 60 to 75% of the time on average, this sort of shot would be saved. But you have a goalkeeper, Andy, who, as you just said, if you concede one shot, for me, it doesn't even matter where it's from. You have very little confidence in him being able to save it comfortably. And the worst part is, the solution to him is a guy who is at the same level in terms of save percentage and conceding goals on very low percentage opportunities. So moving forward, I don't even know what you do. I don't know. There's no way to resolve that. You can't tell your defense to... It's not as if you can go to Kumbula, Mancini, whoever, and say, hey, listen, we need to start conceding these chances further out. I mean, they're already conceding very low percentage opportunities. So I guess to end here, I don't even know what you do. There's no solution. There really isn't.
Yep.
Other than maybe divine intervention.
Intervention, yes.
Beyond that, I don't even know how you even remotely alter your tactics to suit this, because no tactic in the world is meant to prevent a guy shooting for 40 yards and your goalkeeper to let it slip through his hands. Paulo Lopez, man, it is mind-numbingly painful how bad and how just not confident he looks. I guess here's how we'll end. Do you think he can recover? Because if you look at him, how he is now, Andy, I have to tell you, that mistake he made in the derby against Lazio with the header where he fluffed it and made the
where you were in complete control.
Andy, complete control of that match.
One of the few games, by Fonseca in a big game where you were in complete control.
100% control. And it seems like that moment wasn't just a mistake. Listen, Alisson, one of the best that I've seen in my 30 years of life. Even, look at what he did at the weekend, okay? Mistakes happen from goalkeepers. It is human nature. It's a human nature for a striker, for a midfielder to make a mistake. The only problem is when you're a goalkeeper, you make a mistake, it leads to a goal, and you potentially losing a match. We're past that. Do you know how many bad goalkeepers we've seen at Roma? If you're older than, I don't know, 7, you've seen quite a few, okay? So this isn't a new phenomenon, okay?
And hey, even Szczesny had a rough patch at Roma.
The first season, man. Yeah. Ugh. I mean, Chievo against, who was it? Bate Borisov, where he has a goal from 50 yards out on a bounce underneath his legs.
Yep.
Listen, we can live with mistakes. It's not even mistakes, Andy, but it seems what happened in the derby to him was more than that. That seemed like the catalyst for
his Roma
like
time.
Not even that. Just like from him personally, like a mental collapse. And I don't want to make light, obviously, of any sort of mental health issues, but I almost wonder if, from a mental standpoint, that moment completely just annihilated him.
Yeah, and it's tough to figure out what next. You're asking of the defense to play pitch perfect every time. I mean, you really would need divine intervention, though. That, you know, like that scene in Pulp Fiction where the guy comes out of the closet and starts shooting, and he shoots all around them, and they say, "Oh my God, you know, this is divine intervention." You would need opponents to shoot like that. I mean, you have to. It's impossible, and you will find yourself in situations where the difference maker is the goalkeeper. A good goalkeeper, you know, I mean, Alisson in that year at Roma, that full year where he played, and it was the greatest thing in the world.
That game against Atletico Madrid, man. It should go down in history.
And that save against Sampdoria with Caprari just turning into Messi and trying to put the ball like right under the crossbar, and he gets into it. I mean, it's just incredible, and at the same time, I'm not asking of that. You know, I don't need Paul Lopez to. I know that he cannot give me 15 points by himself, because that's what Alisson gave us that year. You know, in the league, it was like 15 points, like something like that. It was just crazy, unbelievable. Paul Lopez could just give me three, four. Just give me some points. Give me reassure me, because. Again, I don't know how many times I have to say this, but this season in particular, with all the teams, everybody's inconsistent, you know? Everybody's having trouble. Everybody's having injuries. Everybody's having COVID cases. Everybody has ups and downs. Atalanta go from just, looking like, an incredible, incredible team to looking very beatable in the second half against a depleted Torino team. Napoli, you know, just a mess all over the place. Antonio Conte being questioned one game to being hailed the new Caesar the next one. So it's very weird. And then you have Pirlo the fraud. It's very weird. It's a very weird time, but that's why it's so important to have everybody perform and contribute a little, and mistakes happen. But man, oh man, could we use a goalkeeper that just gives us, you know, a feeling of, okay, the defense doesn't have it. Okay, he can have it. You know, he can turn it on tonight. Right now, we don't have that.
Lastly, somebody posed this to me in a direct message right before we started recording, and I'd be curious to hear your opinion on this. They said, how come nobody went out of their way to defend Spalletti like they do Fonseca? It is an interesting perspective on things. I hadn't considered it. I'll throw it to you. Do you think that's actually true?
I must live in a different reality, because besides a few Twitter accounts, who's defending Fonseca? I wake up every morning and I see countless articles saying, oh, Fonseca is under speculation. Fonseca is at risk. Fonseca. Fonseca himself said that he's felt like he's under investigation since day one. Spalletti was a great coach, but at his second time at Roma, he found himself, you know, and we don't want to talk about it, but it's impossible to separate the two because the moment he stepped in, the whole Totti thing became a thing because he refused to, you know, to risk a result in the name of Francesco Totti. He refused to let Totti take over a match because he just wanted to take the win home. And I think those are completely different situations. And I don't see this huge backing from anybody of Fonseca. Fonseca is constantly being put next to the names of Allegri. This whole thing with Dzeko blew up in his face a number of times. And I just think, you know, this is stuff that we always, because again, Spalletti, the whole opinion seems now to change. Now people, all of a sudden, I never saw, you know, so much adoration for Spalletti. And
change with time.
Exactly. I mean, right now we have people calling for him. And, you know, when I was asking for him after the terrible Di Francesco experience, I was like, people were saying, oh, are you crazy? Him a third time? No way. And now it's like the second coming of whatever. And it's, you know, I can't. And I'm pretty sure that whole thing with Fonseca will change as soon as you realize that a lot of the names that you have in mind are not realistic options. And then the whole opinion will change again. And so I think these are, you know, it's a very tough situation, a very different teams. Spalletti was managing a whole different team. You know, Spalletti was managing a team that had, you know, a much, much better quality than these guys and different circumstances, different requirements. I think it's complicated. What do you think, Johnny?
I do think a lot of the people calling for Spalletti now were undoubtedly the ones whistling, having a go at him when he wouldn't put... how old was Totti at the time? 69? 69-year-old Totti on against Genoa, you know, against, I don't know, whoever. It is interesting. Again, I think time heals a lot of wounds, so to speak. So I guess I can understand why people would be so adamant for him. I guess I find the whole thing, again, very curious, only because this was a guy that was basically told to go do one after getting, at least from a points perspective, attaining one of the highest points in all of Roma's history, and coming, you know, super, super close to a Scudetto.
But that did not seem to matter then.
Exactly.
That wasn't the priority for a lot of people. And now it seems like that's being reevaluated. So to me, it's always like that, you know, with coaches like Zeman. Zeman, when he came in, everybody, he's the magician, you know, he's got it figured out. And now the perception of him is of an old man who smokes way too much and has no idea of how to play modern football. Everything changes. Opinions change all the time.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever discussed it on here, but I think there's a very particular, we've joked about like Romanisti 1.0, 2.0, so on and so forth. I think there is a very particular sort of Roma supporter who, they're the ones, they have that banner. You just mentioned Zeman. They have the banner that says, we're not slaves to the results. And then they'll be on social media within, you know, 20 minutes, you know, decrying.
Right.
Paolo Fonseca, what are you doing? We need to get Spalletti in here immediately. I find the whole conversation very curious. I find it sort of
John, do we remember that how Luis Enrique was treated?
If you were a real man, you would quit now.
Yeah. Luis Enrique was treated like a dumb schoolboy who had no business coaching, and Zeman was brought in to bring back excitement to the team. And then Luis Enrique goes on and wins the Champions League. That's, to me, that's the summary, the perfect encapsulation of what it really feels like to be a fan of Roma, is to see the guy that everyone's pointing fingers at and saying, oh, look at it. Look how crap he is. Look how bad he is at coaching a team that has such a potential. Pires, Jose Angel, you know. Oh, and then let's have
Boyan,
this magician.
Come on, man.
Yes. Let's have then Zeman. Look at what he's going to do. And then Zeman goes into the crapper. And Luis Enrique goes on and wins the
everything.
Champions League. Yes.
Everything. Ugh. Okay, well, I don't think we can end it any more appropriately than that.
I loved it.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, that was today's therapy session. Hopefully that lasts you for the next 3 to 4 days when we will be back ahead of the match against Udinese. Everybody have a good week. Thank you for tuning in. We will talk to you soon. Ciao.
Ciao.